to Embracing Your Mortality podcast with me, Sue Brain. On the first day of the month, I'm posting an interview with someone who's passionate about helping us all to live more consciously for a better world. And my goodness me, with all the chaos and changes swirling around the globe, we all need inspiration and hope these days. And this is why I'm so pleased to introduce Gabby as my March guest. I was incredibly moved by her courage and tenacity of spirit for dealing with the consequences of what happened when her suitcase fell on her head when she was 23. It turned into a life-changing event because since then she's had to learn to live with constant neurological pain and grapple with massive questions about the meaning of life due to her physical condition. So I'm really happy to welcome you, Gabby, and I'm so delighted you can join me because I know you're never sure quite how you're going to be feeling from one day to the next, or even during this podcast. I'm so happy for you to be here with me. You described to me that before the suitcase event, life for you was fast-paced, jam-packed, with no room for error. And I believe you were working as a language teacher at the time, and all the possibilities of life were spreading out before you, but things are quite different now. So I just wanted to start by asking you what happened when the suitcase fell on your head, and did you know immediately something was wrong?
Yeah, it's thanks first of all so much for having me, Sue. I really appreciate this opportunity to speak about my story, and it's really scary to do so. So if you can hear my voice wavering at all, that's because I am out of my comfort zone. But yeah, let's rewind then, sort of, but what's nearly 10 years now. So I was sitting on a train, I was going to see my cousin and fell asleep, and this suitcase comes flying out of the overhead locker. And I didn't see it coming. I was sort of dozing at the time. And all I remember was that I swore, which I think is a perfectly legitimate response. And there was just a sea of tucks in the carriage around me in this really English way. So, yes, that was my first recollection. That's what comes to mind, is just this, almost the shame instantaneously, but oh my God, I swore. But from that, I remember texting my cousin. I said, hey, I've got hit on the head, so might not be so great for tennis later. But we played tennis and I won. And it wasn't till the next day or day after that I was in a classroom, just gone in as I would normally do to teach. And it was suddenly like I was in a swimming pool. And, you know, when all the sounds sort of bounce about the place and it's all really disorientating. And I can actually feel, as I'm saying this, my hands are starting to shake as I'm going back to that moment, because it was terrifying. And because I was out of control in the classroom. And I remember the students I was working with, they just thought I was having a bit of an off day and I was a bit weird perhaps. And I remember there was some laughter associated with it. And I was just trying to figure out what on earth was going on. So that's the onset really, yeah.
So where you are now, Gabby, I mean, what's your day like? Because I know that you have to live with neurological pain. And I, you know, having spent a little bit of time with you, I know you can't sit down for very long or at all. Is that right?
Yeah. So this is half the thing, Sue. It's actually, so you see me standing today. I'm starting to sit a bit more, but the neurological pain is only one facet of it. So I have pain, which, as you saw, is really difficult to accommodate. So this latest onset of pain was in September. And we thought it was, I maybe thought it was something musculoskeletal, but I just had it confirmed that it's my usual neurological stuff. There's nothing on a scan wrong with me. There's just my nervous system is glitching and it's sending pain signals. So pain is one side. Another symptom is, so I will, my limbs will do strange things. So I might have involuntary tremors. So my legs will kick off, and that might just be like a little gentle tremor, or it might be a full-blown dance of the legs, which is really quite distressing. But actually, the hardest thing for me, and I think this might surprise people because I think pain and tremors and sound distressing themselves, but the hardest thing for me is dizziness. And when I say dizziness, I don't mean, you know, oh, I'm just feeling a little bit dizzy. I mean, on a bad day, I am flat backed in my room. It's completely, I've got to have it completely dark in there. If I do try and get up, I am really staggering all over the place. I look exceptionally drunk. My words are really slurry. So in those moments, it's the most dizziness is the most difficult because I have to disconnect from the world totally. There's no way you and I could have this conversation on a really, really dizzy day. And so I will go for it's not an exaggeration to say for weeks without seeing anybody because I physically can't, because by speaking, it exacerbates my symptoms. And that's the most devastating one, because how do you live without physical communicational contact?
I'm sure you've been asked this question before, but are you absolutely sure this is a result of the suitcase falling on your head?
So I'm really glad you asked the question, Sue, because it feeds into what's been one of the most difficult things throughout this process of what caused this and this invalidation of my own experience that has come through it. So I really appreciate the question in this safe space to answer that. But the questioning that has gone through, are you sure it's not this? Is it not a migraine? I've had my diet looked at, and all I can say is, yes, none of it. There might have been some underlying symptoms, like I had motion sickness before, but from one day to the next, my life changed. I never had these symptoms in this way at all. If it's, I don't know at what point you would talk about this, but this thing of invalidation when you've got a condition that does not go show up on a scan is the primary reason for which I've wanted to come and speak today, really, because I think people just get bounced about from clinician to clinician and you struggle to find your own truth amongst all these voices trying to put you into a box. And so often the box you're trying to be put into, it doesn't fit for you. And it's been so upsetting when I'm saying, no, this is my experience, and someone saying, no, this is it. And that's just, that's been the hardest thing, I think, of anything to get my head around.
How do you work with that? I mean, it's been 10 years now. So have you kind of worked out a personal strategy that helps you to make sense of what's going on for you, or how to talk to doctors that have no idea what to do with you?
I have a whole gambit of coping strategies. And what I realize ultimately at the moment where I'm at is, so I'm just focusing on my own self and what I can do day to day. I know my symptoms better than anyone else at the end of the day. And I am trying to keep very firm that essence of who I am, but working with that in constrained boundaries. And that's my main coping mechanism. We can talk about doctors and stuff, but I think my experience with medical professionals, some medical professionals along this journey, has been so devastating. And in the process of built, you know, preparing for this podcast, I was actually going through some of the letters I've received from neurologists over the time. And I thought, goodness, there's no wonder I've doubted myself along this journey when I read this writing. So for me at the moment, as I say, I'm focusing on what I know is helping me day to day. And if that's, okay, I'm having a really, really dizzy day and I can't see anyone, I can't see anybody. And fortunately, I've got wonderful friends who recognize that my symptoms change and I need different things on different days. So just to give you one example, on a day that, for example, I'm really disconnected from the world, or a week like that, lovely little things might appear on my doorstep or at the back of I love spaghetti hoops. And frankly, if your brain is so foggy that you can't cook anything, spaghetti hoops cold from a can, that is where I'm at on a dizzy day, Sue, and they will appear on my doorstep with nothing said. Or, you know, some food appeared at my back door. So, but it, all the different levels of help that I need. My friends are just really great at meeting me there. And that has been what's got me through this.
It's love, isn't it?
It's love, yeah, totally. And love in such different ways. I think I've experienced all different kinds of love languages along the way.
So can I just ask you, do you live on your own or do you live with other people? Or
I live by myself, yeah. And so I think, again, this is another struggle. I'm fiercely independent. And so having to recognize that sometimes I need help is really, really tough. But I do fairly well. I've got sort of all different kinds of contraptions, which help me. So I'm very proficient with a picker-upper whilst my movement isn't so. I've got all different things. But I think more than practical help, what I've needed is emotional support. And I am just so full. Oh, I hope I'm not going to well up. I'm so full of gratitude for those people who have just held me in that space when. Can I swear, Sue, or not? Okay. When shit hits the fan and you need to let it all out and you just need someone to hold you there and not try and make it right and just be let it all out. That is, I think, one of the most beautiful ways that people have supported me.
You were saying that, you know, before the suitcase fell on your head, that you know, life was just full on for you, incredibly active, very sporty, always out doing, you know, on it like a bonnet.
Yes.
I mean, I'm just thinking about, you know, your life, I don't want to put words in your mouth, obviously, but your life obviously has been curtailed hugely. I mean, you know, at 23, you're thinking maybe that one day you'll get married and have children and blah, 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 all of that.
That wasn't a dream, but there were dreams to travel the world, definitely.
The world. And well, how have you managed to deal with those dreams that you had in the condition that you find yourself in?
Yeah, thanks so much for that question. It's a real good one. And it's, I think, firstly is sometimes I don't always cope, and I think that's I don't want to come on here and say I've got all the answers but what helps me get through is that whatever the boundary is, and I've said these boundaries change every day, every hour, I really live those boundaries to the full. So when we met, I was in bed, well, actually about a month before I saw you. So the worst was I was in bed because the pain was excruciating, but I was actually not too dizzy because I'd been lying down. So I was like, I'm just going to bring everything I can into my bed. And I remember a friend saying, what, you have things that aren't your sheets in your bed? And I was like, hell yes, I had everything in there. So I was writing micro poems about my experience because I was like, I can't get out, so I'll write it in there. I was reading little bits of poetry because, again, like, I was able to read a little bit. And so as soon as the boundaries become a bit bigger, I push them right to the max. So final one. So my thing at the moment is I'm just starting to be able to move around a bit more, but I'm trying not to push my pain too much. So I'm dancing with my hands a lot. This sounds crazy maybe, but I love to groove. And so I've just been... so you can see me bouncing around in the kitchen. I just trying to explore any little parts of my body that I can so that desire to groove is still there and expressed in a small way. So that's how I try and manage it.
I come across as incredibly positive and incredibly engaged with your life and what you are able to do. Have you managed to create this incredibly positive? Because I don't feel that I'm talking to a victim.
I'm talking
to somebody who's got a lot of shit going on, but actually turning it into something that they can manage.
Yeah, I mean, I've really struggled with the word positivity, right? Because that has been like who I am. As my therapist said the other day, she said, you're chronically optimistic. And I was like, that is so on point. And I think I will turn to the sort of the positives of this, because there are some that I can draw. And I think if you say, how have I managed to be positive? It's my previous answer is that whatever I can operate in, I'm quite creative. So I will just go to the boundaries and, you know, explore that safe zone to the absolute max. And that's kept me sane most of the time. But I think I would actually push back a bit on the word positivity. And I think that in order to be able to be, let's say, upbeat and feel okay about things, I really need to sometimes let it all out. And that's something that I didn't before. Like, my default was just positive, I'm fine, let's keep going. And I'm really thankful to a previous partner, actually, who really just let me say, like, are you really fine? Like, are you not angry at this? And I was like, nah, I'm fine, like, just keep going. And actually my positivity, I think, was actually it got out of hand because it was making me push further than I could go and crash and, like, you know, boom and bust the entire time. So I think I still really channel my positivity and creativity, but I'm also allow myself to just let it all out in, and I see no shame in that. And I think I'm actually most proud. A friend said letter the other day, she said, I'm so proud of your optimism. And I just thought, I'm not proud of that. I'm proud of my resilience to get through the shit. And I'm realistic about that. And I'm proud of me now actually saying, no, this is really hard. Insert expletive. So it's a balance of,
I mean, do you go into depression with it, or do you feel like that's not somewhere that, as a personality, that's not you? I mean, some people don't experience depression, other people do.
I think the first word that comes to mind is disconnect. And so when I'm in these really acute dizzy phases or acute pain, I'm not really there. So it's a numbness. And then when that lifts, and it might be suddenly I'm out. So disconnect is the main word for me. But there have been times, I remember times 2016, I don't know why I can remember that, it's in the winter, quite often in the winter. And yeah, I couldn't, at that point, it was really impossible to get in cars without feeling really, really sick, which is still the way today. I don't go in cars where possible. I couldn't really even get out and about. And I think where I felt at my most low is where I can't connect with people, as I've said, or I can't connect with nature. And that, it's, you know, I don't think I'm by nature depressed, but in those moments, I have certainly felt very, very low. Yeah. So that's, yeah, it's been a struggle, yeah.
Yeah. So Gabby, when you kind of look forward, what happens for you?
Yeah. I used to, when I remember there was a phase when people would say, oh, so what are your plans? And I was like, oh, please don't say the P word. Because how do you plan when your day to day is so, like, and I've, so many things have been cancelled along the way that I guess my first thing is to say that if there is anything that I have drawn those positive from this, is that it's forced me to live the moment to moment, right? So I'm not perhaps so good at talking about my future now, because I'm like, literally, I'm like, okay, so we're just going to have to see. So there's that. But there are future dreams. But I think that I think I'm at a crossroads, Sue. I think the reason I, you know, took you up on your kind offer to speak today is that it's the elephant in the room has got too big to hide. And in order to move forward, I need to acknowledge this and make life adjustments rather than trying to keep going down a medical path, perhaps. That's the only way I see going forward, really, is a whole scale sort of overhaul once again of how I go about things.
Because you were really clear with me when you said that you actually wanted to help other people in similar situations as you have to speak out,
yeah,
and contribute to some, you know, make a difference to somebody's life. That's the that when we go through these very, very difficult times, or we have a difficult life,
yeah,
can be very helpful. I agree with that.
I think I was really fearful for coming on today. And then again, a therapist said, she's like, but your experience is your experience. What are you so scared of? And I think that's the most, there are various different things practically I could say I help with, but just to say that if you're being told that your experience isn't valid, if you're being dismissed, if there's a power dynamic being set up when you're going to see someone, like, just, I hear you, and it is so, so tough. And I think the more, if anyone hears anything today that helps them articulate their experience or gives them the courage to just sort of stand their ground in those moments, because, you know, if you go and seek help, medical help, it's so scary, because you don't know what's going to come. So that's my thing. It's that the fear is real, but your experience is valid. And I'm here trying to work out and stick by my truth and live according to that. And I wish all the best others on the same path.
Yeah, and well, you know, on their path within the collective of what
absolutely you- of course, like, I'm very keen to, I don't speak for anybody else at all. And I think I would hate anyone listening to go, oh, well, Gabby's had this experience, that means that this person will want this experience and that help. No, it's being led by the person that is struggling and listening to what they want. And everyone is different, right?
And it's about sharing it, isn't it? It's about saying, you know, life isn't, you know, able-bodied people, we can sort of, can plan our lives.
Yeah.
When you haven't got that ability, or you're disabled, or you're living with chronic pain and you simply can't do that, that's a whole different matter. And one of the things, you know, you were talking about is, you know, how to grapple with the bigger existential. How do you make sense of life? I can make sense of life.
You nearly made me choke on my tea.
How can you, you know, somebody like you who are living a completely different experience of life, how can you make sense of it?
I think it's drilling down to who you really are. And I mean that when everything has been peeled back, right? So all the things I used to do, you know, is traveling this, doing that, you know, working this, they've all gone to a certain extent, right? Everything. And so you work out, you sort of drill down, who is the essence of Gabby? Who is she? And that's the only thing I can work. I can't make sense of life, but it's trying to make sense of, I think I've got to make sense of me first. So sticking to the idea that, because again, when I was thinking about this, I was like, has this totally changed the person that I am? And that was my first response, was yes, it has. And then I thought, no, I think I'm still the same person, just operating within different constraints. So I'm still really carefree, and I'm still, you know, spontaneous and just a fun lover. I'm very sociable, but I have to operate within very different things. I think that's it, is distill down to who you are, or distilling down to who I am has been my way of making sense of things to the extent I can.
Now, this may have been an optical illusion, but did I see you playing the piano or hear you playing the piano?
Oh, yeah, you did. Yeah.
I couldn't believe it was you because of how difficult you were finding it being at this particular place. And you played like a professional. Ask you about that.
Oh, that was a really beautiful moment. At that time, as I say, you know, I couldn't sit down. I'm just starting to sit down now, which is great. But yeah, I was able to stand up and play the piano. And that was it. So it was such a key moment for me, because again, like, if I drill that, I'm not a musician, but I love music. It's a key part of me. And again, I'm making all these funny gestures to show how key it is to me. And in that moment, despite the pain, despite all the crap that was going on, I was able to just, that was what I was playing, was complete invention in the moment. And it was just, it wasn't anything I was recording. So it was just purely just coming from me. And it felt really great because I was able to express me despite being so constrained in my body. Yeah.
Well, it was quite something to listen to. And I knew you hadn't seen me
Oh, okay.
I knew that you were just in the zone.
In the zone, yeah.
And you stopped quite abruptly, and I wondered if it was because it was too much.
Actually, it's more that I don't like taking up space. And I think because I appear quite confident and I, you know, I can talk. I think people think, oh, she loves taking up space. Actually, I really hate it. And I think that, so I stopped there because I was like, oh goodness, maybe someone will think I like taking up space. And I think, again, to come back to this condition, is that I hate the fact that sometimes I need to ask for things to make a situation more doable, like more feasible for me. And that has been really uncomfortable. It's like, no, I have to sort of process and go, no, Gabby, you are worthy of that. It is okay to ask for that. But I find myself having to make more fuss or be more of a center of than I ever want to be. That's just not how I am. But trying to grapple with that and saying, yeah, again, like, it's okay, you're worth it, don't need to minimize. Your experience is legit. And that's how I try and deal with that.
Do you say to somebody whose life abruptly changes like yours did, and they have to live with a situation that is undiagnosable?
Yeah. I mean, so I think it's really hard. I don't want to speak to what other people should do. I think that's really hard to say, and I don't want to put, I think that in its essence is where I'm at, is that you know best, or you will find your own way best, and nothing I could say or nothing else could someone should say should determine that path you're going to take. I think that's really it. And as I say, and we go full circle here, I've had so many people telling me different things, but at the end, this is where I'm at. My truth is that, you know, I was hit over the head. We've been looking for what's going on for a long time. It perhaps does have innate, like, functional neurological disorders, this catch-all term. But, you know, that, yeah, I think, as I say, that the only thing I can share with everyone is stick to what you know best.
Gabby, thank you so much for this. I so value our conversation. And I just want to say again, listening to you play the piano was
That's very kind.
I hope you continue to play it, and hope you share what you play, the fact you played yourself with other people, because it gives you an amazing voice.
Well, I hope to be able to play again. That's one of the losses that I've had, is that I know we're closing off, but I can't keep that position for when I play the piano with my neck. I can't maintain it for very long. So yeah, it's a joy though when I get the opportunity.
I pray for you that you do find a way that you can play.
Thank you, Sue.
Well, that was Gabby. What an inspiration for us all, whether we're disabled or we're dealing with chronic pain or we're able-bodied. Gabby does not have a website, but you can contact her by sending me an email through my website, which is suebrain.co.uk. And of course, I'll pass any emails on to her. My April guest is Felicity Warner, who set up the Soul Midwives movement 20 years ago. Her Soul Midwife training teaches people to soothe the dying and brings a new dimension to how we care for everyone at the end of life. So see you on the 1st of April with Felicity, and thanks for listening. Bye for now.